Hey, real quick, would you like to join me for a fun and super practical challenge to increase your online visibility? The Visibility Kickstarter Challenge is hosted by my friend Alina Vincent, who, if you don't know, she is the queen of online challenges. And that means that this is going to be one of the most actionable, value-packed, and fast-to-implement challenges that you have ever been a part of. I recently used her challenge method in my last launch, and it was the most effective challenge we have ever run, and it was easier than any challenge we've ever run as well. It is completely free, so if you want to join me, I'll be there. Head over to jenlehner.com/084. To sign up. And again, that's Jen Lehner, LEHNER.com/084.
Hey guys, it's Gary Vay, Nerdchup, and you're listening to the Front Row Entrepreneur Podcast with our girl, Jen.
Our guest today calls himself an accidental marketer. He found a niche in advanced Facebook advertising beginning in 2012. His experience with Facebook goes back to his years with the NBA when the league partnered with Facebook in 2007. He's a baseball fan and a stats nerd who shares his love of the game with his three boys. He's also one of the single greatest content creators that I have ever learned from online. Welcome to the show, John Loomer.
Whew, thank you so much, Jen. It's awesome.
Well, it's all true. When I first started my business 10 years ago, you were early in your business too. And I turned to your podcast and your blog and your trainings to learn all about Facebook ads. And the fact of the matter is my business wouldn't be anywhere close to where it is today without Facebook ads. So we can make a cogent argument and say that you are directly responsible for the success of my business. So I really am really super excited to have you here. And the reason that I say that you're one of the greatest content creators that I've ever met online is because you do everything that I love. So you're no BS. You get to the point. You write really clearly. You're a total giver. Honestly, the amount of free, valuable content that you have out there is mind-blowing. You are a true expert, and those experiments that you do are just completely like nobody else does that. So we're going to get to all of that because I have so, so many questions for you. But the first thing, what I want to do first is just start at the very beginning. How did you start your business?
Well, I had no idea what I was doing, and I didn't know I was starting a business. So back in I worked for the NBA from 2005 to 2008, end of 2005 to middle of 2008. And then left that because we couldn't live in New Jersey anymore. And I did a series of things over 2.5 years, and I was laid off twice. And that when that happens, I first of all knew that I did not want to move my family again. I was also spoiled, you know, having worked for the NBA. Even, you know, the last job I had was actually, you know, it was a good gig. It was a fulfilling gig. It was doing some of the things I loved, working for American Cancer Society. I got to work remotely, but it was also bad time economy-wise. And so I had been spoiled those past few years with really good jobs. So, like, I just didn't want another job. And I didn't know I was going to start a business. Like I might have bought the domain that same day after I was laid off. I'm not positive, but I launched the website 11 days later with no clear goals other than feeling like, okay, this is going to help me get my next job. I'm going to showcase what it is I can do. Because I'd learned a lot of things marketing wise over those last few years. And
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Yeah, sure.
When you were with the Cancer Society, did you do like fundraising and that sort of thing?
So I had what was, you know, looking back, probably not ideal, kind of a new position, experimental position that was involved in all that stuff, right? So utilizing social media, online, and other things in new and creative ways for ultimately fundraising and awareness. Yeah. And it was for the Great West Division for American Cancer Society.
Because I one of my first jobs out of college, which I stayed for years and moved up through the ranks, was with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And the reason I ask is because I really feel like I learned, and when I was working with them, like email had just come out. But I feel like when you work for a company where you have to be scrappy like that because they don't have a huge budget and you sort of have to wear so many hats, it teaches you so much. That's really where I learned. I didn't know I was learning marketing. You know what I mean? But like, I really feel like that's where I got most of my marketing skills. Anyway, please continue. So
no, that's a good point because yeah, I had to be scrappy there. That's really where I learned how to, you know, like basics of creating a WordPress website. And just a lot of the little things, you know, with Facebook pages and groups and things like that. You know, the NBA, when I worked for the NBA, that was so early, there weren't even Facebook pages yet. It was just Facebook groups. And there weren't like truly brand groups, right? You could just create a group for anything. Now, there was an official NBA Facebook group. I was the admin of it, which was a really weird experience. But so, yeah, it's interesting. So I had a lot of exposure to Facebook at that time. I fell in love with the platform mainly for personal reasons because I moved around a lot as a kid, and being able to reconnect with all these people you thought you'd never hear from again was amazing. And then having, you know, that exposure with the American Cancer Society, and our oldest son is a cancer survivor, so that's why that also hit home. And so then to get laid off, you know, yeah, it really was being scrappy, right? Assembling this website. It really, looking back, it wasn't a very good website. I even did a lot of design myself and did everything as inexpensively as possible because I not only had no money or didn't have a lot of money, but I knew I was going to be burning through money, which I ultimately did. So like anything, luckily we had savings, but any savings we had would disappear over the next few months. And so I had to be scrappy. Eventually just started writing about stuff I knew that was usually social media focused in the beginning, then marketing related. I think because I realized really around, 3 months later that I was at least creating a, I don't want to say brand, but I'm building something. I don't know what it is. I didn't see myself as starting a business. I started creating enough tutorials and whatnot. They were started to focus on Facebook marketing in February. So what is that, like 6 months later or so? And I started getting good traffic. I leveraged that. We're still in the very beginning here. I don't think that I know how to start a business. So that's creating my own product isn't really a consideration. What I know is I need money. My family needs money. I'm getting traffic. So what I did was, first of all, I started an email list. And then as far as affiliate marketing goes, look, I'm not a natural salesperson. So I'm not going to sell you stuff. But essentially, it was a matter of, hey, this is a tool that I use to create my website. It was essentially it. I mean, there were four or five tools, like, what was the theme? My WordPress theme, right? Or what are the social media tools, third-party tools that I use? Or, you know, something along those lines. And I started getting some really good traffic, and I to the point where some of these companies also wanted to buy ad space on my website. So over time, that improved, right? But it got to the point where it's like, man, this traffic is so good and this real estate on my website is so valuable to these other companies. It could also be valuable to me. I wonder if I should start a product, if I should launch a product. And it started with the most ridiculous idea that wasn't scalable, but it was something. And that was the key to everything that an entrepreneur does. I think you just have to try stuff. Instead of worrying about it. So I created this product that was a Facebook page review where I sent an email, and I don't know, I might have had 2,000 or so people on my list at the time. and there was a PayPal link. And that was it. That was the extent of a landing page or anything. I think I would link to that PayPal within a blog post saying, hey, if you want me to review your Facebook page, I'll do that. Sign up. And that was it. And that was my first product. Within, I don't know, a few months or so, I launched my first training. And that's really when everything exploded, because that was, you may remember Power Editor.
Yes.
That's old school. And that's basically back then it was known if you were serious about Facebook ads, you were using Power Editor. That said, it was extremely buggy, difficult to use, and confusing, which was perfect, right? I didn't even realize this at the time, but my God, that's like, those are the perfect characteristics of a good product. I mean, not only is it advanced advertisers where these are the people who want to spend more, but there's a lot of confusion around it. People want to learn how to use it. And that's when my businesses just exploded. And never used affiliate marketing or anything ever since then, because I could just focus on selling my own stuff.
And then the rest is history, because you like really just doubled down on all things Facebook ads and really became like, you know, you don't have any peers in this space. I mean, I don't know anybody who goes as deep as you do. And I love that you said it was the perfect product, because, you know, because of the fact that it was complicated and there was a demand for people to understand it, and they were people who were willing to pay for that advanced knowledge, but also you do have a talent for breaking down complicated things and making them consumable by most people. Like, we don't have to be stat geeks in order to understand you, which is why I gravitated to your stuff. But let me ask you this, people still want to know about Facebook ads. There's probably more confusion than ever because of everything with iOS and all of that. How has that changed your business? What new challenges have popped up as your business has matured?
Well, you know, what's obvious with my business and probably any business where you're trying to educate people on how to do something, is the minute that everything is easy and everyone knows how to do it, it's bad for you. So I need change. I need there to be some sort of disruption where people are confused and they need me to explain it for them. So yeah, the iOS stuff was a big deal. I mean, that impacted everybody, no matter what, even if you didn't have customers who are on iOS, because of the changes that impacted everyone. So attribution changes and things like that. So that was the biggest thing. And now it's a matter of, you know, a year and a half later, we're starting to get some of that back. But I think we went from this Wild West era of, wow, the results that you can get from Facebook ads are absolutely insane. It doesn't even feel right, to like, these results must be inflated, was often the claim, right? Because a 28-day click, the one-day view, everything combined with that. To then we get to the point of iOS and you're like, where did the conversions go? Why isn't this working? And you're trying to connect the dots and find, you know, some verification that these ads actually are leading to conversions, because especially for anyone where they're selling a more expensive product, that it may take longer than 7 days to make that final decision after clicking your ad. You are no longer seeing those conversions. It didn't matter what device you were on. So it created a lot of uncertainty, a lot of confusion, but we're starting to get some of that back. But there's just so many changes in terms of privacy and browser settings. And we really, I don't know. We'll see where this goes.
Well, you know, I don't do my Facebook ads anymore. I have an expert handle that for me. But I remember in the glory days, when I was doing my own ads, and I could go in and I could say, all right, I want to show this to people who like Amy Porterfield, who make this much money, who drive this kind of car, who recently returned from the Caribbean, who are probably, you know, voted for so-and-so. And it was amazing. It was just so much fun, right? It was like fishing, sort of, I guess. I mean, I'm not a fisherman, but you know, like what lure is going to work? And it really was kind of fun. Is any of that kind of targeting still available?
It is. Now, beginning in January, and maybe even a little bit before that, I mean, they've gone through some rounds of removing interests. So, but, and it's, there's always a question of the direction that Facebook is heading. Is that in reaction to the fact that you can't do a lot of these things anymore? Or is the fact that you can't do a lot of these things anymore partially in response to the fact that if you go broad, you get better results anyway, which is where Facebook's going. So it's interesting because, back in the day, look, I love all the levers and experimenting. And like my favorite thing was micro targeting and focusing on the most engaged audience. The people are most likely to get value out of what I'm offering and using to drive traffic as well as, you know, build my list and whatnot. And so making this shift where Facebook really wants you to go broad, right? So they really don't even want you to mess with those interests anymore. So anyone who runs a conversions campaign, especially if you use a lookalike audience, they automatically turn on lookalike expansion, which is now advanced lookalikes, which means, yes, you can start with that 1% lookalike. But if they want to, Facebook thinks they can get you more results, they can move beyond that percentage to a greater percentage. And if you're using a conversions campaign and you select an interest, so yeah, you select Amy Porterfield as an interest, which is, I'm pretty sure she's still there. That would be the starting targeting, but they have expansion on detailed targeting expansion on for that as well, which is advantage detailed targeting now, where that's the starting point. But if they want to, they can go beyond that. So they're forcing us to go broader than we're really used to. And the reality is, you know, it seems that Facebook's machine learning is getting better. Now, I would say that is especially the case for e-com. And I have some doubts when you're just looking for a thing, you know, like driving traffic to your website or getting good engagement or something like that. But we're coming into that time where, and this is kind of where TikTok seems to be going, and some other ad platforms, even Google as well, where it's like, you know what? I know you want us to hyper-target, but you should trust us, is basically what the platform is saying. We can do a better job than you can by picking out these little interests, learning from, you know, how people are engaging and finding more people like them.
Well, speaking of TikTok, I noticed that you got some TikTok action going over there. And, you know, I report the news every morning on this flash briefing that I do. So I'm well aware of and also I spend a lot of time on TikTok, but I mean, in terms of what's available to advertisers, I talk about it a lot, but I haven't done any of it. And then I watched, I think it was a TikTok that you did where you talked about how you boosted a post or you promoted a post, and you did it initially to get more followers because you wanted to experiment with TikTok Live, and you have to have 1,000 followers on TikTok to go live. So this morning, I got one of my TikToks. I don't have that many, but I picked one. And when it came to choosing your audience, it's like, trust us, ask, you know, let us do it or you can do it. But so I wanted to see like how micro I could get, which wasn't very. It was like, you know, I could pick some hashtags and I could pick like really some very broad topics. In fact, marketing and business and entrepreneurship wasn't even on there. But anyway, I don't know how it's going. I just did that this morning, but I want to talk about TikTok. Like, what do you think about it? Are you going to go all in? Are you going to pivot away from Facebook to TikTok? Like, tell us everything.
No. So, man, there's so much we could talk about on this topic. So as early as probably September, TikTok and just that overall format was a joke to me. And part of it was like just super uncomfortable with that format. Like I don't like being in front of a camera. I don't like worrying about lighting and what I look like and sound like. And also just the, like, I opened up the TikTok app for the first time and I don't know where to start. Like all the filters and the just everything. It's just insane to me. And it's also a matter of like my old school way of thinking with videos is that, and I got this question once I did start creating these videos all the time. It's like, what's the ROI of that? My inability to measure that, because you really can't drive traffic organically, especially. And oftentimes I would say you shouldn't try to. I get to that a little bit later. But so the whole matter of, yeah, trust that you're doing this for a good reason was really hard for someone who normally has all this data, like, oh, this is driving good traffic, which means people are joining my email list, which means I'm gonna get more revenue. Like, even if I can't do a direct line to revenue, if I can at least drive direct line to traffic, that's good. And now you're gonna tell me create videos, which are really hard to drive traffic from, and really maybe you shouldn't even try to in most cases. That was really hard to swallow. And I know that a lot of people have thought the same thing when they've consumed my videos. Okay. But so my business has been on a bit of a decline the past few years. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Some of it, I would say, like when you create a business and you put together your processes, I guess I can only speak for myself. I wasn't preparing a business that's going to be around for 10, 20 years. Like, you're just trying to like, how do we make this most efficient and effective right now? And so it's like, oh, we follow these processes. My blog is my home base. Let's make sure everything's focused on my blog. And also I'm a dad and I was a baseball coach and like, I don't want to work a lot. Let me try to make this in a way, build this business around the fact that I want to be a baseball coach for my kids and watch them grow up and all that kind of stuff. So I started, you know, having these systems and processes set up for that, not changing, not really evolving because, hey, this works. Working less and less, and also resisting video and resisting those changes. And very slowly, I would say, especially once COVID hit, that also impacted me just in a way that I wasn't expecting. Like I think you already mentioned it. I don't like to sell. So if you're going to present me with a situation where I'm hearing from people who are getting laid off, their businesses are failing as a result of all this stuff that was going on, and I'm supposed to sell to you, that was just a very hard block to overcome. Like my entire plans for that first year were pretty much scrapped. And once I created a product, it was like, it's not going to be a Facebook ads related product. It was more like, how do you get online? Like, you know, live videos and things like that. And even then that was, I sold it super cheap because I just didn't want to gouge people during that time. And so that really accelerated this descent for my business that I wasn't really prepared for. And, I think everything kind of came together at the right time in that I needed to figure something out quick with my business. At the same time, I wrapped up my final season coaching baseball for my youngest son because that was, it was like a full-time job, travel ball. So is that point where I was like, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do differently? What am I not doing right now? It's time to change and evolve. And I had to commit to video. So it was understanding that I'm going to create some really bad videos. And I had to be okay with that. That was the first thing, is like to embrace that, knowing that, kind of like with my own, with the start of my website, like my website looked like crap, you know, create like the design wise and things like that. Like, what was I doing? But you had to start somewhere. And so at the videos, like, no one's watching this video anyway.
Yes. Wait, let's stop there for a minute, because I just want to reiterate this because it really is so important. for anybody who's afraid to jump on any platform. When you first start, even though you have a huge following, when you went to TikTok, they weren't there because you weren't there. And so, I mean, they weren't looking for you. I mean, honestly, I would never think to look for John Loomer on TikTok. I mean, that's the truth, you know, and not, you know, now I will, obviously, but like, I know that I just don't picture you there, right? So whatever, all of us have to start from zero. And when you start from zero, the beauty is nobody's looking, nobody's following you. So very few people are going to see you look dumb. And by the time you start to get viewers, you've gotten better. So please continue. But I really wanted to get the highlighter pen out on that.
It's absolutely true. And really, those who are watching it care about you. They're cheering you on. So that's the thing. It's like you have to approach it with a beginner's mind and understanding that every video you create has a purpose and you're going to learn from it. And also, I started consuming the content, just kind of understanding what it was that I liked or didn't like about other people's videos, what made me stop and watch. I would ask them questions like, how did you do this? And that helped a lot. And so it was a learning process. It was an acceptance that it's going to be tough in the early going, but it's also understanding that there's a reason I need to do this. Right. So once I started to get comfortable enough with what I was doing on TikTok, it became much bigger than TikTok for me. It was like this, and this is why I recommend everybody gets into it if you're a small business. It's the format more than the platform. So once I created that video, I could take that same video, not with the watermark or anything, and I'd use it on Instagram Reels, Facebook Reels, YouTube Shorts. I'd even put it on a square canvas and send it to LinkedIn. And I'd even take, if it wasn't a tutorial, I'd take that audio and throw it into a podcast template and create a podcast short. It's a nice, quick podcast episode. So the point being is like all of a sudden I'm everywhere. And so it's not just like all this effort worrying about building up my TikTok audience. Well, it's no longer just about TikTok. It's about these other places as well. And a crazy thing happened. So yeah, and it was really hard in the early going to stay more, especially because I was really inefficient and I was starting to get burned out. Like there's a video I created like, oh my God, like I'm trying to create 3 videos a day and it's taking 2 hours per video. Like it's got to get better than this. And it's gotten better than that. But so there was that, but then it's like not really seeing, okay, what's the impact of this initially? But then I started hearing from people. So on Facebook, it's like, oh, John, it was this really weird feeling when I get this kind of comment, because it both made me feel good and depressed at the same time. It's like, John, you helped me so much with my business back in 2014, 2015, years ago. I haven't seen you for years, right? It's like, oh, that kind of dug deep, right? Like, I appreciate it. I'm glad, you know, I helped you, but oh my God, I haven't gone anywhere. It's just that I haven't been playing the game with video, right? But also with Instagram, it gave me reason to focus on Instagram, because I created my Instagram account years ago, like again, completely resistant to the idea of I'm gonna upload images. What am I gonna do? I can't really drive traffic with Instagram. There's no reason for me to be there. Then would eventually convert it to a business profile just so that I'd have a placement that I could use in Ads Manager. That was really it. I wasn't using Instagram. I might have grown to like 4,000 followers of people who are probably really disappointed that I wasn't creating content. But I started publishing these videos and all of a sudden now I'm getting all this engagement that I haven't seen on Instagram before. So I was seeing these signs and then it just hit me like all at once, where there were a series of 4 one-on-ones that I conducted in 2 days. So people paid for these one-on-ones. And in each case, these are people who had been on my list for years and years, but they hadn't bought anything for a while. And they told me specifically, I am here because of your videos. Right. So suddenly it's like, I don't know what the ROI of this is. I can't directly connect a specific video, or my efforts generally beyond like word of mouth, people told me this, but I keep hearing that. And there's a reason, right? There are two main things there. It's like, first of all, yes, you're going to reach more people if you play that game of video, as opposed to hoping you're driving traffic and people see the link I share, right? But there's that personal connection that you can't get from the written word, or it's really hard to get from the written word. And I made a personal connection in the old days before video was a huge thing. Since people consume content differently, I lost a lot of that. So I think that's the biggest thing with video, is making that personal connection with people, where like someone signed up last week and she said, I feel like I know you now. And that's why she signed up. And it's just, it's light bulb, but it's also a matter of what was I thinking? I was so stubborn for too long, but at least I'm here now.
Well, the Pubcast, your podcast, did that for you as well. Like I know as a listener, I felt like I knew you. Do you still have that podcast?
I do. So the podcast, it's funny because it's a lot of the same challenges, really hard to measure. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I would hear from someone that, oh yeah, I listen to you. I first ran into you from the podcast, or I listen to you all the time. Like the numbers are just so hard. I actually saw, you know, I've had over 1 million downloads over the 10 years or so, but like, you know, like downloads are downloads. Like you don't know how many people are actually listening or listening to the end, or, you know, what are they doing? But beyond that, it's like, so I've been inconsistent with it over the years. And that's another thing I was realizing, and why I'm here today, is I was losing that personal connection. First of all, I stopped interviewing people just because, you know, it's a lot of work. Someone's internet connection's not working. Their mic's not working. They don't show up on time. They want to reschedule, you know, all that stuff. So I stopped interviewing people and I just started doing solos. I stopped being on other people's episodes just because it was a commitment, time commitment. So I could focus on all these other things, not really realizing how much it would impact me ultimately. So my podcast still exists, but I started finding ways to like make it more efficient, right? I'd record solo episodes, which you lose a lot when you do solo episodes. You lose that back and forth. That's really important. And I started doing these shorts like about a year ago, where again, I was just like, how can I keep recording these? So at least I put stuff out that's valuable without, you know, all the production that goes behind it. So there'd be anywhere from like a 2 to 10 minute, you know, episode. I started doing those again. But so basically I've been taking lately, because so much of my effort is dedicated to video, I've been repurposing a lot of those videos into these podcast shorts that, at least for now, I think it's pretty effective. But I think long-term, I'll probably get back to interviewing, because I understand how valuable that is.
Well, since you said you're doing this content from 2 to 10 minutes, I think you need to do a flash briefing for, you know, because they show up on all the smart devices. So Google Home, Apple's Pod, if they even still have that. And then, of course, Alexa. I don't want to say her name, but I could tell you all about that later, but it's really just a matter of you getting another RSS feed and uploading all the content you're already doing. And it blows me away that people who purchase stuff from me, who tell me that they found me over there and they're not following me anywhere else, but that's a conversation for another day. Okay. So back to TikTok. What about TikTok ads? Like, what are you going to do? What should we do?
Well, the first thing is, if anyone listening has ever run Facebook ads, you're going to wonder why you haven't run TikTok ads before, because you hop into that and I haven't heard this confirmed 100%, but I'm pretty sure that former Facebook ads manager designers are the ones that worked on TikTok, because it's called TikTok Ads Manager. The terminology is exactly the same. So you hop in there, you'll feel completely at home if you're used to Facebook Ads Manager. They've even got Audience Insights, which is like the old Facebook Audience Insights before they scrapped it because of privacy concerns, strangely enough. But creating a campaign is many of the same things, right? Campaign, what they call ad group, and then ad, many of the same stuff. Now, the thing to remember, though, is that the platform's different. So what works on Facebook won't necessarily work on TikTok. But I do see, though, kind of like what you're explaining, what you're describing with your kind of experiment there. You know, I haven't done anything beyond trying to build my audience and trying to get more people to watch my videos and things like that, which is always a mixed bag, no matter what platform you're talking about, because it's like your quality is probably not going to be great. It's really hard to isolate that quality. Like, even if you start using those interests and behaviors and hashtags and whatnot, I'll be curious to hear what you find. I found that just made my CPM go crazy. Like, when I didn't go broad, like, the one thing I've seen with TikTok ads is CPM, if you go broad, it's like $2, if that, for CPM. And then I was using, it was a marketing and advertising interest. And I think I might have used like the hashtags for like Facebook ads or something. And my CPM went up to like $100.
Wow.
It's just really hard to get good result, like profitable. I don't say profitable, but results that are worthwhile, even if it's quality, when you start spending that high. So, but I've also compared some of my results. Like, okay, I'm looking at these videos and compare watch time and follow rate and all that kind of stuff compared to when I trust the algorithm with that automatic audience.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of crazy. And then I've compared that to like when I've tried to slice and dice and like use lookalike audiences and things like that. And it's really not a noticeable difference that I've seen in terms of quality, right? So like when you look at how long they're listening and things like that, and no matter what, I feel like there is a numbers game here. It's kind of like the early days of Facebook, where the number of followers does matter, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, there's functionality that's only available with a certain number of followers. But look, we'd be lying if we said, when people look at your profile and it says 500 followers, they're not going to look at you differently if you had 50,000 followers.
True.
Right? Mm-hmm. And with Facebook, it's not really as much of a thing these days because that's so buried. Facebook intentionally buries that. But that's pretty front and center on TikTok right now. So there is that element to it. Now, you obviously want quality followers though too, so you don't just want to blindly pay. But I'm still not yet using the ads to build leads or anything. I do use the organic opt-in option, which basically, you know, with each video there's this ability, like this little thing comes up, because like I don't even know what it's called. I can't remember what it's called anymore. This little thing comes up at the bottom. If you click it, you can sign up for my email list. That hasn't been crazy popular that people sign up for, but it's just one way I've used it. It's beyond just watch my video.
That is so cool. Well, I'm in my TikTok right now, and I was able to promote because there's a little like tab that says promote, but I don't see Ads Manager. Where is that?
Oh, so you're doing it from the app itself. So basically, you don't even need to be a business, I don't think.
I have a business account on TikTok, or creator account. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's a creator account.
But it's completely separate. It is completely separate because it's not like an ad account. It's in Ads Manager. And like you have to buy credits and stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Right? You don't have to do all that in the TikTok Ads Manager.
Oh. So is right? that's you go that to the browser?
Correct.
Oh. Correct.
It's completely different. You're not buying. It's just like Facebook Ads Manager. And honestly, I don't think the two talk to each other. Like if you did hit the promote, I don't think it realizes you've run ads from the TikTok Ads Manager.
Oh, weird. Okay. When we get off this podcast, I'm going to go and get all over that. All right. So, but how did you did something like you gave yourself like a 1 month challenge or something, and you did like a video a day. Like what, is that what you did?
So it was, I don't even know if I had a specific number I was saying I wanted to record. Like I had a goal of recording three every day, but basically publishing three every day. And so it started, I can't remember, was it like October 3rd or something like that? I recorded at least one, published at least one every day. I published 70 during the month of October.
Oh my gosh.
And that sounds crazy, but then you break it down like, oh yeah, it's two or three a day. And that sounds reasonable when you say two or three a day. It sounds less reasonable when you're saying 70. But
were you batching like 10 on Mondays, or were you literally like doing two a day, or were you posting two a day?
Batching was impossible because it took me 2 hours to create each video.
Oh, right.
Right. So it was definitely on the fly. Now I've gotten better. Now, the other thing is to understand, like, there are different ways of recording videos. And that's the thing that I need to remind myself of over and over and over. Like, not every single one needs to be this 1 minute long tutorial where I'm screen sharing and I've got to do this. It's more of a production, and it's going to take about an hour to do all that. You can also do just a quick, use it through the app, through the TikTok app, record a quick thought. You know, sometimes that's all you need to do. And that's not going to take much time at all. So I think I need to get to the point where I understand that there are multiple ways of doing this.
Okay. I have an experiment for you, John. Yeah. Okay. I think this is what you need to do. And I'm doing this completely selfishly. I think you need to host a challenge for us, right? Like, we have to sign up for this TikTok challenge.
Oh, boy.
Right? And you preface it with like, look, I'm the new kid on the block on TikTok, but I want to share with you what I've learned so far. And what I've learned is that you just have to do it. And then we sign up for your challenge. And what we have to do is you're going to create like six different videos of TikTok, and we have to pick one to duet. All right?
Oh, jeez. I don't even completely understand duets.
But this is so good because you're going to get all these people duetting your videos, which of course are then going to get you to rise up in the algorithm. And also you're teaching us at the same time. I don't really completely understand duet either, but but something like that. Like, we have to, and really and truly, I would rather do a TikTok challenge with you who, you know, we learn with you, right? Like,
right.
So we get to learn with you, and it really could become this fun thing. I'm just saying, because I've had this in the back of my mind for a long time. Like, I really would like to challenge myself with like, you know, a TikTok a day or two a day or whatever, but it would be way more fun if it was curated and like something structured and organized. So I'm just putting that out there. Okay.
I like it.
Okay, good. Now my listeners would kill me if we got all the way through this interview and I didn't ask you about what was new in Facebook ads. Like, what do we need to know about what's new in Facebook ads? What do we need to pay attention to?
Well, there's actually some good stuff happening. So much of the things that went away as a result of iOS is coming back. So for example, the 28-day click attribution used to be 28-day click, 1 day view was a default attribution, which meant in your reporting, by default, those who clicked your ad and converted within 28 days or viewed your ad without clicking and converted within a day will show as a conversion related to specific ad. That was moved to 7 day click, 1 day view. So we lost all that. You can now, it's still 7 day click, 1 day view, but you can access the 8 to 28 day click conversion attribution now, which is big. I think especially during the holidays.
Yes. Yes.
You could tell a client, you know, ads manager told me that we got 100 conversions, but there are actually another 15 that happened beyond 7 day click. And that's kind of cool. It's good to know. So the feature that allows that is another one that went away, which is compare attribution. That was a big deal too, because an example would be like back in the days where like our numbers inflated, for example. Well, you could compare attribution to see how many of those conversions happen within 1 day click, 7 day click, 28 day click, and 1 day view, right? And so it's really good to have that tool. When it went away, I found the biggest impact of that was remarketing. So I don't know about you, but like remarketing campaigns, you always have to look a little skeptically at with results, because you're reaching people that you're also emailing. In a lot of cases. So they may see your ad, they don't click it, you email them that same day. I mean, they might not have really even seen it. It was just displayed to them. They get an email from you the same day, they click it, they convert. Your numbers are crazy on Facebook because you get credit for it. The problem during the last year and a half was you could no longer say, oh, okay, those numbers are big, but I know that 30% came from one day view, and these are people I remarketed to. Now it was all thrown into the same bucket, and you had no idea how much of it was view through. So that came back, which is extremely helpful. And when I say it came back, not everybody has it, unfortunately. But
Facebook.
I know. That's just the way every rollout is.
Uh-huh.
And then the final thing was related to conversions. Again, you could break down your results by things like placement and geography and age and gender. So, for example, you could say you have one campaign running, but you want to know, how did Facebook newsfeed compared to like mobile newsfeed compared to like Instagram. And once you use a breakdown by placement, you could see, this is how much was spent on each placement and also how many conversions happened in each place. Well, one of the changes that happened during iOS was you could still break down that information, but conversions would no longer appear. So you were just kind of guessing as far as how many conversions happened in each placement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is coming back as well.
Oh, so thank goodness.
To me, these are all signs that, like, why would they bring this stuff back if it's only going to get more and more difficult to track because of new laws, because of other browsers and devices starting to get more strict with privacy and whatnot and blocking and the pixel situation, everything else. So why would they bring these things back unless they felt like they had it under control, right? So whether it's their modeling, there's something that they must think, otherwise it's a complete waste of time and effort. Like, why they bring it back? So I think that's a sign that things are about to get better in terms of Facebook advertising, attribution, and reporting, that hopefully it'll be a little bit closer to what we remember before all this happened.
Well, that is very, very good news. Okay, this is my last question, and then I want to talk about how people can work with you because you are such a wealth of knowledge. But before we get there, I am super curious about what your content creation process looks like behind the scenes. Like, what does your workroom look like? Like, do you have a team? Who does what? Because when I look at your blog, for example, you seem to be very consistent. You're prolific and you have all these beautiful screenshots. It's like everything is meticulous. Again, like I said in the intro, everything is very clear, concise, well thought out. Like, I know that you just can't whip those things out, in 5 minutes. But So please tell us what's behind the curtain.
Oh, there's a lot there. Well, first of all, as far as consistency, that's something I'm bringing back because I have to stay on myself about that. It can be difficult. If you go back and look through the last few years again, you'll see a lack of consistency overall. Or there's one thing that I'm focusing most of my time on, right? That said, I run pretty lean. Now, I do have a team, but in this team, I've had the same team for it's been about 5 years. So the team would be Tracy, who's handles all customer support and triage of who needs to answer this or how should this be addressed. She's amazing. Luke answers a lot of the questions that come in that are technical. And he also goes into our Facebook groups to answer some questions there to take the pressure off of me and have a tech team, Joel's team, who they handle all the website and all the things that I don't understand. It's technical. So that's the thing, first of all. But beyond that, when it comes to content creation, that's entirely me. And, I wouldn't recommend it. It just depends on your vision for your brand, right? There were times when I took a lot of guest posts. I would have other people direct training and things like that. I think those were also the times when my business started taking the wrong turn because I started relying on those people too much. And I also became, I think, less sharp as a result because I wasn't as needed. So when my brand is me, that becomes difficult when I start relying on other people to do content, if I'm not like hold myself accountable to make sure I'm still doing all the things I used to do. That said, I just put together like a little video on this too, of what my routine is going to look like for next year, because once I create a routine for the start of the year, it always becomes a mess by the end of the year, which is what happened this year. So I'm not even doing this right now, but I will when I start the year. I try to have like a day that's for blogging, a day, and it's going to have to be a day plus for video creation, a day when I can be on people's podcasts or I can record podcasts, and a day when I'm doing meetings. So either it's team meetings or one-on-ones that people can book with me, things like that. And then, you know, also making sure that every day I've got these blocks of time that are for personal stuff. So it could be, you know, get my day going and, you know, reading and meditating. And I have this whole coffee routine with our espresso maker for me and my wife. And then I'm making sure I exercise every day. Like, you have to build those things in. But part of it's just being focused as possible, like specializing it in those days. It's like, look, my office is nothing amazing. Like my equipment, my blogging, I'm lucky. I feel like I can sit down and write a blog post in under an hour. I mean, it's not that. That's one of the things where it's really helped. I mean, for my business, it's largely been around my blog. But I've also been writing for a long time. So, you know, in terms of processes, I think to be as focused and specialized and intentional, it's just really important.
I love that. I love the idea that, this is my audience knows that like every single year I start the new year saying, all right, I'm going to batch.
Right.
I'm going to batch and I'm going to be consistent. And I don't, because what happens is, if I do more than one podcast interview a day, like I think John Dumas does like 5 a day or something or more, I'm just exhausted after one, you know? And so there's no batch going to happen, but you know, same with YouTube videos. Like, they just seem to take forever, but whatever. I love the idea.
Right.
For me, I was trying to pack it all in one day, but I like how you've done that. Like, have a day for the blogging, a day for video, a day for whatever. I think that's really, really smart. I might try to go that route myself.
But even like the day for blogging, that sounds insane. Well, it's not really a day of blogging. It's just like, this is the day I'm going to write. So if I'm going to have 2 blog posts, and look, it depends on how long it's going to take you, but I've got a block of 4 hours to write those 2 blog posts. And then early in the day, guess what? I needed more time to do videos. So early in the day, I'm going to have another couple hours where I can do video. So yeah, I agree with you. I couldn't do like an entire day of recording videos or an entire day of interviewing people on a podcast. There's still breaks in there. And there's still some variation, like, okay, if I'm not a guest on someone's show, then I can record as well. So it kind of changes your frame of mind a bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, like, for me, I think the way I'm going to go into it is that because it's not batching if I don't do more than one, but right now it's just one, because it's like, that seems to be what my stamina is. But I think if I make like the whole first week of the month, give myself the whole first week, I'm still going to be ahead of the game if I batch in that way. Even if I just did video 1 week, right? Because then if I only release 1 a week, I've got I've got a month worth of content. So, I mean, I could do it. I need to do it. I just need to stop making excuses. All right.
Well, and to interrupt real quick, I think big part of that is just like, I have a document where I come up with ideas. Keep track of blog post ideas, video ideas, podcast ideas, so that I can then go to it when it's time for me to sit down and do it. And you're not trying to think something up on the fly either.
Yeah, such a good tip. Then you're not like staring at the blank page every time you try to create. Such a good tip. Okay, so I know people want more. And I know you're doing, I'm going to make sure and get this published before you do this masterclass. Can you tell us about that?
So yeah, I did something a little different this year where I did a monthly free webinar. It's called 5 Tips. And largely focused on Facebook ads, though, of course, now I've experimented a little with TikTok. There's been a little TikTok in there as well. But basically, it's just a quick, you know, 45 minutes or so webinar where I give you the five things that are relevant right now to help you with your advertising. So if you go to johnloomer.com, assuming this, my webinar hasn't happened yet, when you hear this, there will be a banner at the very top to sign up for it. It's going to be on next, as we record this, next Thursday, the 15th, I believe.
December 15th. Yep.
December 15th. Yep.
Okay. And so you know what, if anybody listens to this after the fact, if they end up on your website, johnloomer.com, it's a win because you guys, I got to tell you, like, you really, it's, you know, block some time out, you know, carve out a little time when you go down there, be really intentional about it. Because when you go to johnloomer.com, you're just going to be blown away by all the great free resources that he has there. And then if you want to take it a step further, they can sign up for Power Hitters Club, right?
Yeah, there are really two main ways to take that next step with me. I mean, sometimes you may just want to sit down with me to talk about your ads, right? Like, you, if you're not a community type person, you can book one-on-ones with me. Otherwise, I have my Power Hitters Club membership, which I've been running for the last like 9 years or so. And within my elite community, so there's a Facebook group and we do strategy sessions every Tuesday. I have a weekly webinar to update them on everything that's happening every Wednesday. You get discounts on my one-on-ones. You get access to my entire training library. It's good stuff. So you can either find that on johnloomer.com or if you go to powerhittersclub.com, get that there too.
Yeah, and let's make sure everybody knows that you spell your name J-O-N. It's not J-O-H-N. So J-O-N-L-O-O-M-E-R.com. John, this has really been so great. It was a thrill for me because you are one of my early mentors and you still remain a guiding light. So I really appreciate the time that you spent with us today.
I appreciate you, Jen. Thanks so much.
Take care.